First, President Biden gave a formal address earlier this afternoon announcing his decision to pull the remaining U.S. troops out of Afghanistan by September 11th of this year.
After consulting closely with our allies and partners, with our military leaders and intelligence personnel, with our diplomats and our development experts, with the Congress and the Vice President, as well as with Mr. Ghani and many others around the world, I've concluded that it's time to end America's longest war. It's time for American troops to come home.
It's the week in Washington. We'll take a look at several top stories in national politics, including the decision to pause Johnson & Johnson vaccinations, the return of Congress and its priorities, as well as the trial of Derek Chauvin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the president's announcement and his decision to pull the remaining troops out of Afghanistan? Is this something that impacts you personally? Did you serve as part of this two-decade conflict, or have you had a family member, son, or daughter serve? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Tolu Olorunipa is a frequent guest here on our Week in Washington segment. He's now national political reporter for The Washington Post. Tolu, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back.
Let's start with that announcement from President Biden on Afghanistan. What are we hearing in reaction around Washington in the little bit of time since he made that announcement?
Well, there has definitely been mixed reactions. We have Republicans and Democrats who have been waiting for the United States to get out of Afghanistan for quite a while. So there is some bipartisan support for this announcement that Joe Biden is going to be pulling all troops out of the country before September 11th, that 20th anniversary. There also has been some pushback. There are some more defense hawks who think that we're leaving too early, who think that our withdrawal from Afghanistan should be based on conditions on the ground, not just an arbitrary date. And Biden is having some negative response from some Democrats and Republicans who are not happy with the idea of pulling out just based on a date and not based on achieving the goals. I don't think there are many officials in Washington or elsewhere who would say that the United States can declare victory in Afghanistan. We are sort of pulling out almost out of exhaustion and because we have been there and it has been our longest war, but not necessarily because we've achieved certain goals or vanquished the Taliban. So I do think that there is some pushback and there are some people who wish that Biden would stay the course a bit longer and allow the troops who are still there to complete their mission. But it seems like Biden has come up to the conclusion that no matter what he hears, either from the Pentagon or from detractors on the Hill, he is ready to do this. He has long been a skeptic of this war. And now that he's president, he does not want to prolong it. He said that he does not want to hand this war over to another president, even as he is the fourth president to oversee this war. He does not want to hand it over to a fifth. So he seems pretty determined to make this ending of the war part of his legacy as president.
This is interesting because it's a point of consistency from former President Trump to President Biden. President Trump had made efforts or at least a lot of statements saying he was going to work to bring troops home from Afghanistan. He had set a deadline, I think May of this year, and got some of the similar response. Some Democrats and Republicans criticizing former President Trump as they are now President Biden. What do you make of that one point of apparent agreement between Presidents Trump and Biden?
Yes, they definitely both agree about the need to get American troops out of Afghanistan. They each did not want to preside over that war. President Trump did leave troops in the country for quite a few years. And, you know, he has been criticized for not having a consistent policy. At the beginning of his term, he increased the number of troops and he was fighting with some of his defense officials and criticizing them publicly over the strategy there, saying they didn't know what they were doing, that he knew more than the generals. So at least on this decision, Biden has more support from within his own party. You don't have Democrats saying that Biden is being inconsistent and not following the lead of the experts in his administration, that he's being, you know, flippant with how to fight this war. It does seem like he has support from at least some Democrats who believe that he's taken this decision with a lot of consultation and with consistency. So that helps him a bit, but they do have both former President Trump and President Biden, they do have a similar sort of emotion towards this war, that they do not want to see it prolonged, and they do not see a easy path to victory or even a possible path to victory at this point. So they're both looking for a way to extract the United States from this war. It seems like Biden is doing it much earlier in his term, and for that reason, he's probably going to get less pushback than Trump, who waited so long, and it seemed almost political that he announced it right as the campaign was heating up and he was facing re-election, and he wanted to be able to say, I'm withdrawing all the troops from Afghanistan, as a sort of political statement. So for that reason, Biden is getting somewhat less pushback, but it is still a very politically fraught decision, and any kind of terrorist threat or national security threat that may emanate from the Middle East, and specifically Afghanistan, that's going to be something that the Biden administration has to watch very closely, because that could blow back on his administration if it seems like it's a result of a premature withdrawal from this war.
Talking to Tolu Olorunipa from The Washington Post, we're looking at some of the top stories in national news, including the announcement from the president today, a timeline to withdraw remaining American troops from Afghanistan by September 11th of this year. Let's bring on a caller now on that topic at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us in Madison. Tom, hi.
Good afternoon. Once again, the United States has expended tremendous blood and treasure in a forlorn effort that was impossible to win, when our enemy, Osama bin Laden, was hiding in plain sight in one of our allied nations. The Afghans have defeated every army that's been in there since day one. The future of Afghanistan is virtually certain. The Chinese are going to move in there with strategic trade deals and foreign aid and steal it out from the rest of the world.
Tom, thanks a lot for the call. And Tom, referring there initially to Osama bin Laden, and President Biden referred to the initial justification for involvement in Afghanistan maybe ending with the death of Osama bin Laden, as Tom was alluding to, not in Afghanistan, but in neighboring Pakistan.
Yeah, there's definitely a sense that Biden has the ability to declare this war over, because the central mission when it comes to taking on Osama bin Laden and eliminating that terrorist threat has been achieved. It was achieved several years ago. And I think Biden will say that he was opposed to, you know, staying much longer after that happened. And I think that's going to be part of his messaging as he moves towards the September 11th anniversary, as he carries out this withdrawal, that he says that not only has the major threat been eliminated, but the United States is a very big and very strong country that can protect itself without having thousands of troops on the ground thousands of miles away. And there are other ways to use intelligence, to use other kinds of defense and national security strategies to protect the homeland without necessarily having to deploy so many troops in a war that has been very costly, as the caller said, that has led to a lot of bloodshed, and that, you know, the taxpayers of this country continue to pay the price for on a daily basis, in terms of not only the health and the mental health of the thousands of soldiers and other service members that were deployed, but also, you know, the opportunity cost of the trillions of dollars that were spent in the Middle East that could have been spent on domestic priorities. And I think it's a bipartisan agreement in Washington that money that has gone out the door was not necessarily well spent overall, and that many lawmakers would rather have a mulligan and would rather have another chance to spend that money on other priorities over the last 20 years.
We're talking to Washington Post national political reporter Tolu Olorunipa. It's the week in Washington. We're looking at some of the top stories in national news. We talked some about the Biden administration's decision on Afghanistan. Coming up, we'll look at some of Tolu's reporting related to the Derek Chauvin trial in Minneapolis. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been watching that trial closely? Are there lessons you think need to be learned during that trial for policing in America, for dealing with communities facing poverty as well. Tulu's been looking at George Floyd's hometown, Houston. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now about top national news stories with Tulu Olorunipa, national political reporter for The Washington Post. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be talking about the Derek Chauvin trial for the alleged murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. We'll touch, I think, on the Johnson & Johnson pause as well. Join with your thoughts on those topics, your questions at 800-642-1234. Tulu, you've been following a couple threads in the Derek Chauvin trial and George Floyd's life and death, and one of them took you to George Floyd's hometown, where you're looking for the impact of poverty relief programs. Can you tell us a little bit about that story?
Yes. So we went to George Floyd's old neighborhood in the Third Ward of Houston, one of the poorest neighborhoods in that section of the city, to look at how Joe Biden's anti-poverty legislation and agenda are playing out. We know that Biden passed this $1.9 trillion relief plan, which was heavily focused on trying to alleviate poverty in high poverty areas like George Floyd's old neighborhood. And, you know, Biden has talked a lot about equity and about how George Floyd's death really impacted his legislative agenda and made him want to focus more on, you know, protecting people who are vulnerable, people who were, who grew up in very tough circumstances as George Floyd did. And so we went and spoke to residents and families in this neighborhood to get a sense for how Biden's administration was impacting their lives. So we talked to families who had received some of the $1,400 relief checks, unemployment benefits, housing benefits, and other programs that are essentially designed to give people a leg up and give people a chance to sort of break out of poverty. And for a neighborhood like that, this is the kind of programming that would potentially have a major widespread impact on families across the neighborhood, sort of a multiplicative effect of having pulled multiple families out of poverty and maybe making the neighborhood somewhat an easier place to live and an easier place for children to grow up. So we talked to a lot of families who were saying that they were able to receive some of the benefits. We also saw some of the difficulties that the Biden administration will have in reaching some of its goals, because even though a large number of people did get their relief checks, they face much bigger and much more fundamental issues in their attempts to pull themselves out of poverty. Areas including crime, health issues, education issues that will not be solved by a government check still remain. And we looked at how the Biden administration will really face an uphill task of having a very broad attempt at alleviating poverty in a place where it's been entrenched for so many decades, and how difficult that task will be. And we talked to some Biden administration officials about their goals and how they plan to try to tackle this very, very large problem.
And you also looked at the trial itself and wider issues raised in it as the defense for Derek Chauvin, the officer charged here in the death of George Floyd, the defense raising questions of George Floyd's drug use. And you say it is being brought up in the trial. It looks a little different than in past trials of people who have died in police custody.
Yes, that's right. We definitely expected George Floyd's drug use, his drug abuse problem to be highlighted by the defense. He was under the influence at the time that he was killed. And the defense has used that issue to say that maybe it was not the police officer who killed George Floyd, but it was a combination of his use of lethal drugs as well as his pre-existing health issues that led to his death. And that also that police were justified in trying to restrain him because they did not know what he might do because he was under the influence of various drugs, including fentanyl and methamphetamines. And we talk about how things have changed in the political landscape, in the society, so that drug issues and drug abuse are not as stigmatized as they once were. And you did not have the defense really openly trying to paint George Floyd as some sort of failed moral character because he had used drugs, and other people who were with George Floyd at the time, his girlfriend, who also admitted to being addicted to opioids, were treated in much more gentle ways by the defense and were not attacked on the personal level, or did not have their credibility attacked based on their drug use. That's different from what we've seen in the past. We have seen the drug use of victims of police violence highlighted by defense attorneys, but usually it's a much more harsh approach, and there's much less understanding of what we now know to be an issue that's a health issue, not necessarily a moral failing. So we have seen society change in that way, and we're starting to see that play out over the course of this trial. But to be sure, the trial is definitely focusing on Floyd's use of drugs. The defense is really hanging its hat on that as a way to try to sow reasonable doubt in the minds of the jury to maybe allow this officer to be acquitted. And that is something that we have seen over the past years, that, sort of the smearing of victims by highlighting some of their flaws, including their drug use. And that's happening in this trial as well.
Talking to Tolu Olorunipa, national political reporter for The Washington Post, looking at some of the top stories in American news and politics. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. Let's take it back to D.C. now. Tolu, we had the news early yesterday that one of the three vaccines approved in the United States, the Johnson & Johnson one-shot vaccine, put on hold over health concerns. We talked about that with a health expert yesterday. Just wanted to ask about what the Biden administration is saying and leading health officials are saying about how this is going to affect the overall vaccine rollout. What kind of things are they saying about that?
Well, they are trying to reassure Americans that this will not affect the rollout or the pace of the rollout or the availability of vaccines, that the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccine are still available and they will continue to be available. And they are essentially saying that the pace will continue without any kind of slowdown. But one thing that we have to all watch is the vaccine hesitancy that may be inspired by this decision to pause the J&J rollout, in part because there are people who are taking a wait and see approach, who are wondering whether or not other vaccines may have issues as well. And we're already sort of on the fence about whether to take some of these vaccines, and to have the Johnson & Johnson vaccine sort of abruptly pause and to have stories, even though there are a limited number of stories so far, but stories of blood clots and very serious illnesses that may come from taking that vaccine, has really led to questions in the country about whether or not the process behind these vaccines was safe. Now, the Biden administration is trying to reassure the public that everything was handled according to the T, and they're only making this pause out of an abundance of caution, and the prevalence of issues is so low as to be almost minuscule in the grand scheme of things. But they are taking this decision out of an abundance of caution and trying to reassure the public that taking the vaccine, whether from Pfizer or from Moderna, will not lead to any major issues, because there have been tens of millions of people who have taken those vaccines and have not had issues, and that they are still encouraging people to continue to sign up for these vaccines to try to reach herd immunity as quickly as possible as the virus continues to spread in the country at a very high level. Even though we have seen vaccinations increase, we are not seeing a sharp decrease in cases yet. And I think the Biden administration is trying to get there by encouraging Americans to continue to sign up for vaccines and to make sure that vaccines are available in every part of the country where people need them.
Also this week, here comes Congress back out of recess, and President Biden had unveiled his American Jobs Plan, the infrastructure idea, hoping to get some Republican support, also facing the possibility of reusing reconciliation to do it without any Republican support in the Senate. What kind of things are you watching for now that Congress is back on the job when it comes to this ongoing issue, Tolu, of infrastructure?
Yeah, I'm watching very closely to see if any of the Republicans that Biden announced and invited over to the White House over the past couple of days will voice some support for an infrastructure package and what number they put out. I have heard that there are some Republicans that are saying they would be willing to spend a few hundred billion dollars on infrastructure, maybe as high as $800 billion. That's far short of what Biden has proposed, sort of $2.3 or $2.4 trillion in spending. But it may start the process of bipartisanship, or it may close the door to bipartisanship, depending on what the number is, whether or not it's seen as a low ball offer and it causes the Biden administration to walk away and say, we're going to do this with only Democrats through reconciliation. I do ultimately think that that's where we end up, a reconciliation style bill. Anything can happen between now and when the bill is ultimately passed. But if Republicans are able to say that they will bring 10 Republicans on board, which is the number that Biden would need to pass something without using reconciliation, that may get the attention of the White House to say, we can work in a bipartisan way. We can pass something with, yes, all 50 Democrats, but at least 10 Republicans, and do something good for the country, which is to update the infrastructure of the roads and bridges and all of the different products that people use on a daily basis. But it does seem like a far cry for some of these Republicans to sign up with what would be a political win for the Biden administration, and getting 10 of them on board may be extremely difficult. So at this point, it does appear like reconciliation is the path ahead. But in the meantime, we'll have to see what happens with any kind of counteroffer that the Republicans bring on board, and whether or not the Biden administration is ready to play ball.
In just our last minute, Tolu, what else are you watching for over the next week in national news?
There are a ton of different things. I will be watching what's happening with foreign policy, the Biden administration's response to what's happening with Iran. Will be very closely watched. The Iran deal that President Trump walked away from is in a very fragile state at this moment, and I'll be watching to see what the Biden administration does to rescue that deal. It does appear that the Iranians are close to trying to put some pressure on the Biden administration by moving forward with its nuclear program to kind of put the Biden administration in a box. How they respond will be very closely watched. And then finally, I'll be watching for President Biden's first address to the joint session of Congress, which is taking place at the end of the month. It was just announced. That will be very closely watched as well.
Tolu, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Tolu Olorunipa is a national political reporter for The Washington Post. We talked to him today for our weekly look at several top stories in national news, including President Biden announcing today that all American troops in Afghanistan would pull out by the 20th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. We'll look more at that issue, by the way, coming up this Friday afternoon here on Central Time.